Oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention. A kingdom for a stage, princes to act, and monarchs to behold the swelling scene. Then should the warlike Harry, like himself, assume the port of Mars, and at his heels, leashed in like hounds, should famine, sword, and fire crouch for employment. But pardon, gentles all, the flat, unraised spirits that have dared on this unworthy scaffold to bring forth so great an object. Can this cockpit hold the vasty fields of France? Or may we cram within this wooden O the very casks that did affright the air at Agincourt? Oh, pardon. Since a crooked figure may attest in little place a million. And let us ciphers to this great account on your imaginary forces work. Suppose, within the girdle of these walls are now confined two mighty monarchies, whose high upreared and abutting fronts the perilous narrow ocean parts asunder. Piece out our imperfections with your thoughts. Into a thousand parts divide one man and make imaginary puissance. Think when we talk of horses that you see them printing their proud hoofs i' the receiving earth, for 'tis your thoughts that now must deck our kings, carry them here and there, jumping o'er times, turning the accomplishment of many years into an hourglass. For the which supply admit me, chorus, to this history, who prologue-like your humble patience pray, gently to hear, kindly to judge our play.
My lord, I'll tell you. That self Bill is urged, which in the 11th year of the last king's reign was like, and had indeed against us passed. But that the scambling among quiet time did push it out of further question.
How, my lord, shall we resist it now?
It must be thought on. If it pass against us, we lose the better half of our possession, for all the temporal lands which men devout by testament have given to the church would they strip from us, being valued thus. As much as would maintain to the king's honour a full 15 earls and 1,500 knights, 6,200 good esquires, and to the relief of lazars and weak age, of indigent faint souls past corporal toil, 100 almshouses right well supplied, and to the coffers of the king beside, £1,000 by the year. Thus runs the bill.
This would drink deep.
To drink the cup and all.
But what prevention?
The king is full of grace and fair regard.
And a true lover of the Holy Church.
The courses of his youth promised it not. The breath no sooner left his father's body, but that his wildness, mortified in him, seemed to die too. Yet at that very moment, consideration, like an angel, came and whipped the offending atom out of him, leaving his body as a paradise, envelop and contain celestial spirits. Never was such a sudden scholar made. Never came reformation in the flood with such a heady current, scarring faults. Nor never hydra-headed wilfulness so soon did lose his seat, and all at once, as in this king.
We are blessed in the change.
Hear him but reason in divinity. And all admiring, with an inward wish, you would desire the king were made a prelate. Hear him debate of commonwealth affairs, you would say it hath been all in all his study. List his discourse of war, and you shall hear a fearful battle rendered you in music. Turn him to any cause of policy, the Gordian knot of it he will unloose, familiar as his garter. But when he speaks, the air, a chartered libertine, is still, and the mute wonder lurketh in men's ears to steal his sweet and honeyed sentences, so that the art and practic part of life must be the mistress to this lyric. Which is a wonder how his grace should glean it, for his addiction was to courses vain. His company is unlettered, rude, and shallow. His hours filled up with riots, banquets, sports, and never noted in him any study, any retirement, any sequestration from open haunts and popularity.
How now for mitigation of this bill urged by the commons? Doth his majesty incline to it or no?
He seems indifferent, or rather swaying more upon our part than cherishing the exhibitors against us. For I have made an offer to his majesty, upon our spiritual convocation and in regard of causes now in hand, which I have opened to His Grace at large, as touching France, to give a greater sum than ever at one time the clergy yet did to his predecessors part withal.
How did this offer seem received, my lord?
With good acceptance of His Majesty. Save that there was not time enough to hear, as I perceive His Grace would fain have done, the severals and unhidden passages of his true titles to some certain dukedoms, and generally to the crown and seat of France, derived from Edward, his great-grandfather.
What was the impediment that broke this off?
The French ambassador upon that instant craved audience. And the hour, I think, has come to give him hearing. Is it 4 o'clock?
It is.
Then go we in to know his embassy. God and his angels guard your sacred throne and make you long become it.
Sure, we thank you. My learned lord, we pray you to proceed and justly and religiously unfold why the law celique that they have in France or should not bar us in our claim. And God forbid, my dear and faithful lord, that you should fashion, rest, or bow your reading, or nicely charge your understanding soul with opening titles miscreate, whose right suits not in native colors with the truth. For God doth know how many now in health shall drop their blood in approbation of what your reverence shall incite us to. Therefore take heed how you impawn our person, how you awake our sleeping sword of war. We charge you in the name of God. Take heed.
Then hear me, gracious sovereign, and you peers that owe yourselves your lives and services to this imperial throne. There is no bar to make against your highness' claim to France, but this, which they produce from Pharamond. Interim Salicam, Molieri's ne succedent. No woman shall succeed in Salic land. Which Salic land, the French, unjustly, glows to be the realm of France, and Pharamond the founder of this law and female bar. Yet their own authors faithfully affirm that the land Salic is in Germany, between the floods of Salla and of Elbe, where Charles the Great, having subdued the Saxons, there left behind and settled certain French, who, holding in disdain the German women, for some dishonest manners of their life, established then this law, to wit, no female should be in heretics in Salic land, which Salic, as I said, twixt Elbe and Sala is at this day in Germany called Meissen. Then doth it well appear the Salic law was not devised for the realm of France. Howbeit, they would hold up this Salic law to bar your highness claiming from a female, and rather choose to hide them in a net than amply to embar their crooked titles usurped from you and your progenitors.
May I with right and conscience make this claim?
A sin upon my head, dread sovereign, for in the Book of Numbers it is writ, when the man dies, let the inheritance descend unto the daughter. Gracious lord, stand for your own. Unwind your bloody flag. Look back into your mighty ancestors. Go, my dread lord, to your great-grandsire's tomb from whom you claim. Invoke his warlike spirit and your great uncle's Edward the Black Prince.
Awake remembrance of these valiant dead, and with your puissant arm renew their feats.
Your brother kings and monarchs of the earth, do all expect that you should rouse yourself, as did the former lions of your blood?
They know your grace hath cause and means and might, so hath your highness. Never king of England had noblers richer, nor more loyal subjects, whose hearts have left their bodies here in England and lie pavilioned in the fields of France.
Oh, let their bodies follow, my dear liege, with blood and sword and fire to win your right. In aid whereof, we of the spirituality will raise your highness such a mighty sum as never did the clergy at one time bring into any of your ancestors.
We must not only arm to invade the French, but lay down our proportion to defend against the Scot. We'll make road upon us with all advantages.
There is a saying, very old and true, if that you will France win, then with Scotland first begin. For once the eagle England being in prey, to her unguarded nest the weasel Scot comes sneaking, and so sucks her princely eggs, playing the mouse in absence of the cat to tear and havoc more than she can eat.
Well, it follows then the cat must stay at home. But that is but a crushed necessity, since we have locks to safeguard necessaries, pretty traps to catch the petty thieves, while that the armored hand doth fight abroad, the advised head defends itself at home. For government, though high and low, and lower put into parts doth keep in one consent, congreeing in a full and natural close, like music.
Therefore doth heaven divide the state of man in diverse functions, setting endeavor in continual motion, to which is fixed as an aim or but, obedience. For thus work the honeybees, creatures that by a rule in nature teach the act of order to a peopled kingdom. They have a king, and officers of sorts. Some, like magistrates, correct at home. Others, like merchants, venture trade abroad. Others, like soldiers, armored in their stings, make root upon the summer's velvet buds, which pillage they with merry march bring home to the tent royal of their emperor, who, busied in his majesty, surveys the singing masons building roofs of gold, the civil citizens kneading up the honey, the poor mechanic porters crowding in their heavy burdens at his narrow gate, the sad-eyed justice with his surly hum delivering o'er to executors pale the lazy, yawning drone. I this infer, that many things, having full reference to one consent, may work contrariously. So many a thousand actions, once afoot, end in one purpose and be all well borne, without defeat. Therefore to France, my liege! Divide your happy England into four, whereof take you one quarter into France, and you withal shall make old Gallia shake. If we with thrice such powers left at home cannot defend our own doors from the dog, let us be worried, and our nation lose the name of hardiness and policy.
Call in the messengers sent from the Dauphin. Now are we well resolved? And by God's help and yours, the noble sinews of our power, France being ours, we'll bend it to our oar or break it all to pieces. Now are we well prepared to know the pleasure of our fair cousin Dauphin? For we hear your greeting is from him, not from the king.
May it please your majesty to give us leave freely to render what we have in charge? Or shall we sparingly show you far off the Dauphin's meaning and our embassy?
We are no tyrant, but a Christian king, unto whose grace our passion is as subject as are our wretches fettered in our prisons. Therefore, with frank and with uncurbed plainness, tell us the Dauphin's mind.
Thus then, in few, your highness lately sending into France did order certain dukedoms that you claimed of your great predecessor, King Edward III. In answer of which claim, the prince, our master, says that you savor too much of your youth and bids you be advised there's naught in France that can be with a nimble galliard one. You cannot revel into dukedoms there. He therefore sends you meter for your spirit, this ton of treasure. And in lieu of this, desires you let the dukedoms that you claim hear no more of you. This, the Dauphin speaks.
What treasure, uncle?
Tennis balls, my liege.
We are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His present and your pains, we thank you for. When we have matched our rackets to these balls, we will in France, by God's grace, play a set shall strike his father's crown into the hazard. Tell him he hath made a match with such a wrangler that all the courts of France shall be disturbed with chases. And we understand him well how he comes o'er us with our wilder days, not measuring what use we made of them. We never valued this poor seat of England, and therefore living hence did give ourselves to barbarous license, as 'tis ever common that men are merriest when they are from home. But tell the Dauphin I will keep my state, and be like a king, and show my sail of greatness when I do rouse me in my throne of France. For that I have laid by my majesty, and plodded like a man for working days. But I will rise there with so full a glory that I shall dazzle all the eyes of France. They strike the Dauphin blind to look on us. and tell the pleasant prince this mock of his hath turned his balls to gunstones. And his soul shall stand sore charged for the wasteful vengeance that shall fly with them. For many a thousand widows shall this his mock, mock out of their dear husbands, mock mothers from their sons, mock castles down. And some are yet ungotten and unborn that shall have cause to curse the Dauphin School. But this lies all within the will of God, to whom I do appeal, and in whose name tell you the Dauphin I am coming on. Venge me as I may, and put forth my rightful hand in a well-hallowed cause. So get you hence in peace. And tell the Dauphin his jest will savor but of shallow wit. When thousands weep, more than did laugh at it, convey them with safe conduct. Fare you well.
This was a merry message.
We hope to make the sender blush at it. Therefore, my lords, a bit no happy hour that may give furtherance to our expedition. For we have now no fort in us but France, save those to God that run before our business. Therefore, let our proportions for these wars be soon collected, and all things thought upon that may with reasonable swiftness add more feathers to our wings. For God before will chide this Dauphin at his father's door. Hey!
Hey! Now all the youth of England are on fire, and silken dalliance in the wardrobe lies. Now thrive the armourers, and honour's thought reigns solely in the breast of every man. They sell the pasture now to buy the horse, following the mirror of all Christian kings with winged heels as English Mercuries. For now sits expectation in the air, and hides a sword from hilts unto the point with crowns imperial, crowns and coronets promised to Harry and his followers. The French, advised by good intelligence of this most dreadful preparation, shake in their fear, and with pale policy seek to divert the English purposes. O England, model to thy inward greatness. Like little body with a mighty heart, what mightst thou do that honour would thee do were all thy children kind and natural? But see thy fault. France hath in thee found out a nest of hollow bosoms, which he fills with treacherous crowns, and three corrupted men. One, Richard, Earl of Cambridge, and the second, Henry, Lord Scroope of Masham, and the third, Sir Thomas Grey, Knight of Northumberland, have, for the guilt of France, oh, guilt indeed, confirmed conspiracy with fearful France, and by their hands this grace of kings must die, if hell and treason hold their promises, ere he take ship for France and in Southampton. Linger your patience on, and we'll digest the abuse of distance, force a play. The sum is paid. The traitors are agreed. The king is set from London. And the scene is now transported, gentles, to Southampton. There is the playhouse now. There must you sit. And thence to France shall we convey you, safe, and bring you back, charming the narrow seas to give you gentle pass. For, if we may, we'll not offend one's stomach with our play. But till the king come forth, and not till then, unto Southampton do we shift our scene.